So, Justin, as detailed in our bonus show last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, Elena and I came over to your house as invited for a for a game night with you and some other friends. And we did pumpkin carving. And Elena and I struggled with the pumpkin carving. The task was to do a was given by you and Claire, saying like, okay, like carve your best like Halloween character. And so Elaine and I said, I got this. Very easy plan. In Charlie, the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, it's the kid, I don't remember which one, I think it's Pigpen, who's a ghost, but he's got holes all over his sheet. And so it was just a pumpkin with eyes and then a bunch of circles around it. Very fun. We had a great time. Everyone else did wonderful art, the wonderful pumpkin art. And so we had a great time. Elena was telling her friends, not her friend, some of the people she works with. She works at Starbucks, and so a lot of the people she works with are like a bit younger than her. And they were like, oh my gosh, Justin and Claire set you up.
What?
And we're like, Elena's like, what do you mean? Like, they set you up to look stupid. Because they invited a bunch of people who are really good at carving pumpkins and you guys who are really bad at carving pumpkins in an attempt to set you up and make you look dumb in front of a bunch of people. And Elena had to explain to her, like, that stops when you get older. Like,
yeah,
no, that is not what happened. Like, absolutely not. Like, no, we had a great time is what happened. We were not embarrassed. We had fun.
Peter, I have a confession to make.
Please.
I feel like I've been read by these teenagers that work with Elena because I
was it a setup?
I've been following you for the past several years. Yeah. Every October, I'm like, let's see if they can actually carve a pumpkin. We did research. We hired a PI. who also was the origami killer. Do we have to announce spoilers killer. Or anything like that?
No.
So the truth was they are correct. We did do that.
That's
on purpose.
So fucking
it was
funny.
The long con, really.
I was like, Elaine and I were laughing so much about this because it's just funny because it's like, oh man, like if you are, you know, 18, that happens sometimes. You know what I mean? Like where like people are mean to you or like whatever, like when you're in college or high school or whatever, like that happens for sure. But we like Elena didn't know how to explain like, no, that stops happening at a certain point.
We're done.
And also like we're hanging out with like people we like. So that's not going to happen. Yeah.
I do have to say you took your pumpkin. The rest of the pumpkins were there. One of them literally the next morning destroyed. And then the other ones molded pretty damn quickly.
Okay. So we kept our pumpkin in our little kitchenette.
Uh-oh.
And Elena was sick. On Tuesday and Wednesday of this week, and so she stayed home and I went out, you know, to take care of whatever, and I came back inside. And do you ever like once you've like left the climate you're in and you come back into the climate, you're like, whoa,
something's a little different here.
It was so damp and humid in our apartment, and I couldn't, and like specifically like right when you walk in, which is like where our kitchen is, and it was like, what is going on here? And it's because this giant ass pumpkin is just rotting.
Yeah.
All over the place. Like now, so fast.
Maybe that was the joke. We just got spoiled pumpkins or something like
Yeah.
But we had like a bunch of like little gourds in the house or whatever. And those are still fine. I think maybe because you carve them or something like that, that they just like got destroyed. But
I feel like in my memory, like of carving pumpkins as like a kid and even like in like recent years, like
they'd be fine.
They're not just like dissolve the second you carve it, like within a week. What are you talking about?
Have you heard of the squirrel pumpkin carving by any chance?
So no.
you take a pumpkin and you smear peanut butter on it, like things are, and then they'll like bite out the pumpkin to design it. So my father-in-law did that. So I'm holding it up to the screen. They really got aggressive on one of the eyes, but for the most part, that's not bad, you know?
Yeah, I see it. I see the
vision.
That's
pretty good. Yeah. Can you imagine that artist there? Can you imagine if we did that? Like, that would have been the real setup if we were carving pumpkins at this party, and it was like you is like it was the four of us doing it, like the four different pumpkins and like two squirrels in there, and the squirrels just like just like destroyed us with their design, like the perfect design. That would have been a story for the ages.
Yeah, I can't believe it was a setup. it's so funny because it reminds me of like, oh yeah, like that used to be the thing I worried about. You know what I mean? Like it's so interesting. Like, yeah, just like stupid, like small interpersonal stuff, not like big interpersonal stuff sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, but no, Elena was like, now they have a house.
They don't have time for that.
No, why? Like, why? But yeah, just it was just a fun little look into being younger. You know what I mean?
Like, now, to be clear, I'm gonna be like, there is nothing wrong with your pumpkin. I think
we had so much fun.
The one thing with your pumpkin is that I if anything, you guys were the most unique because like it wasn't immediately obvious what it was.
Yeah,
and then once you explained it, it was hilarious.
There is no like, I think that like, Kate at the party, I think she felt like we were embarrassed and we weren't, you know what I mean? We were just like, we thought it was very funny that you guys all did like incredible pumpkins and that we are like, which way is the sharp part of the knife? You know what I mean? Like we had a really good time with it. And yeah, also like too, like, I'm not a pumpkin carver. That's not my skill. It's not Elena's skill. So who cares? We're just going to have fun. And we did, like what you said, we were creative and we got to just like carve some holes in a pumpkin. It was great. It was fun. And it was also a setup. So it's Hitbox. What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Hitbox episode number 217. My name is Peter Hunspetek, and joining me, as always, is my wonderful friend and co-host, Justin Makovich. Justin, making a little bit of a face.
Peter, I got a question for you, and I asked all my students this year. Has there ever been a moment of your life of just like pure disappointment? Like you were so disappointed. I mean, we've all been there, right?
100%.
Let me just tell you, the Chicago Bears... I don't know if you've heard of what happened.
I saw what happened actually last night.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, are you talking about when they tipped it off into the hands of the other guy in the end zone?
Yeah. Like literally they were up the 55 yards, Hail Mary, tipped it in the other guy, and then they won the game. Not the Bears, by the way.
Because they like basically handed them a touchdown, right?
The game, literally. Yes. It was like no time on the clock. Yeah.
So me and Elena, we had to drop her car off at car shop to get the oil changed. And on the way back, it was late last night. And we were like, we should do some dinner. We don't have like a ton of food at home. Like, let's just stop and grab some food. So we stopped at this like, I'm trying to think of like how to describe this. It's like the place you go for chicken fingers in Schaumburg. Does that make sense?
Raising Cane's.
No, but it's like a local. It's like okay. A local. Elena was like, oh, do you want to go to Cane's? I was like, ooh, can we actually go to this local place that I know you're sick of? Cause like you've lived here your whole life, but I haven't. So I want to go. So we went and we walked in and it is a bar first, a restaurant second. Okay. You know what I mean? But they have these great chicken fingers.
Probably really good.
Very, very good. And we walked in.
Oh,
the second that happened. Not knowing there was a Bears game or anything, people are screaming, crying, flipping tables, basically. Yeah, dude, it looked brutal, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry to see it.
There are very few things, like in sports, like, you know, you can have like a buzzer beater, one of the most exciting moments ever, right? Like if you are on the winning side of a buzzer beater.
Yeah.
But if you're like at a home game and then you lose to a buzzer beater, probably one of the most like demoralizing things ever. If you're in hockey and you lose a shootout, probably one of the just the most awkward like environments in there, but like it's just something about it that it's just like so like whatever. This one, it was like the both teams were kind of sucking, and then Chicago like had two opportunities to win the game. On the second opportunity, they actually get up by three, and you're like, nothing's gonna happen. Like I'm sitting there like a giddy little school child, like they've won this game, and then they didn't, and it was tough, over. Dude. Yeah, so. That was pretty bad. Not gonna lie, the Bears let me down again.
Just brutal. It was brutal. It seems like Chicago is having a tough time in sports.
Yeah,
the White Sox are the worst team of all time.
Have you seen the TV show The Floor? Are you familiar with this?
No.
Highly recommended. It's basically like there's 100 people on like an LED floor, and each one's in a box, and each person has a category that they are an expert on. And then they basically have to challenge another person's category. And then they'll basically go head to head in the 45 seconds to try to like guess images that represent the category. So for example, it'll be like school supplies. So they'll show a picture of a stapler and you'd be like, stapler. They'll show a picture of a pencil. It'd be like pencil. And you have to like go back and forth and get as like to make sure that you have enough time so it doesn't run out. It's a really fun game.
Okay.
Some of the categories are harder than school supplies, obviously. But like there's a person on there from Naperville, Illinois. Shout out to Naperville.
Shout out.
Who was a White Sox fan. And they brought it up being like, oh, it must be a hard time for you. When it's making like national game shows that the White Sox are an embarrassment, you know, it's a bad time to be a Chicago sports fan.
Dude, they did like a game studio delay apology. Do you see this on Twitter? Yeah. They like release a statement apologizing for how bad they've been. Yeah.
Did you see the player on the Bears who basically the Hail Mary was like a 12 second play. Right.
Yeah.
It took them 12 seconds because they basically have like two people trying to rush the quarterback. Everyone else is like back trying to stop it. One of the Bears defenders was like literally like shutting down the audience and taunting them back to the play. Like you see it happening and you see the quarterback like running in the background and this player's like, hey, we got you. Then he turns around like, you know, 7-8 seconds into this play, runs to where everyone else is in the middle of the field. And he's basically the one who tips the ball into the end zone.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So this guy is like getting a whole bunch of shit for it. So I'm sure he did not have a good flight home. I can guarantee you that. Today I went on Twitter just now and his name is trending with 33,000 people in our local area tweeting about him. So
what's this guy's name?
Tyreek Stevenson.
I did see that trending today. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Still going. Can't get rid of it.
No, that's rough. That is very, very fun. But Justin, what if we talked about video games? How would that rub you? All right. The right way.
Probably better than the Bears.
Than the Bears. Yeah. That's fair. Here's a preview of what's coming up in the news. Justin has played Metaphor and he wants to talk about it. Ubisoft dissolves one of its best teams and Animal Crossing Pocket Camp is making a comeback. We're going to talk about those headlines and more. But before we do, I would like to tell our listeners that they can join our Patreon, patreon.com/hitboxpod, become a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jane Noel, GKS and Josh Durham. Every week, our deluxe podcast producers get an additional 30-minute bonus episode. So if you're interested in that, again, patreon.com/hitboxpod. You can also join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. You can support us on Twitter at hitboxpod or rate us in your podcast player of choice. Justin,
yeah,
will you join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go.
Metacritic Roundup.
Three games in the Metacritic Roundup this week. First one, Life is Strange, Double Exposure. This is the return to the Life is Strange series after, I think, 2 years between this and
True Colors.
Life is Strange, True Colors. Yeah. On the PC, it scored a 75. On the Xbox Series X, a 75. And the PS5, a 72. It is coming to Switch, but it is unscored there. Justin, have you seen reviews for this thing?
I have not. Are people liking it or hating it?
It is either getting nines out of tens or like fours out of tens.
That's a Life is Strange game for you right there.
Yeah, but it seems like, let's see here. It seems like a lot of people who are like big fans of Life is Strange reviewed this thing and did not really like it. I think let me just read you the first two paragraphs here from Janet Garcia's tweet review for Pentapixels. I started Life is Strange Double Exposure having some of my favorite gaming experiences of 2024 and ended it with some of my worst. I've never seen a game do such a 180 in quality for its final 1 to 2 episodes. Because Double Exposure isn't even out yet, these are my spoiler-free thoughts. Normally, I'd abstain from quick, less detailed write-ups like this, but I had such a strong negative reaction to the final episode of Life is Strange Double Exposure, I needed to talk about it as quickly as the embargo allowed. The letdown is so colossal that I don't recommend this game at all. The highs I experienced are completely marred by the final delivery. And to be clear, when I say ending, I don't mean any final choice or last cutscene, also bad. I mean the ending, starting halfway into Chapter 4, the rising action, climax, and resolution that make up the game's final section. So this seems to be a sentiment that a lot of reviewers are sharing about, like, this game starts really, really strong. The first two episodes are excellent. And then at the halfway mark, it just completely, you know, like, shoots itself in the foot, falls to the ground. Which is surprising, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I do wonder, like, sometimes with this stuff, like, if they just ran out of time for it, you know, at a certain point.
Yeah.
And they just had to finish it, was what it sounds like kind of happened. I do have to say, just like from like first blush of the game, I think the game looks, it's hard. It's both more realistic and more like fake than actually the other Life is Strange games. Like,
yeah.
it looks, I don't know. I don't want to say it looks like an animated film because I think that's too generous for it. But like, there are times when you're looking at it and you're like, wow, this is actually animated pretty well, because I think a lot of the Life is Strange games are pretty stiff. But then there's, yes, also times that you're looking at it and be like, these look like freaking cartoon characters and not in a positive sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of disappointed with this. I know my wife has played a lot of these. She started playing True Colors, but I do not believe she finished it at any point. But
it's kind of a snooze fest.
Yeah, yeah. That's the one. Is that the one when they have the LARPing game, yes, in the woods? Yeah.
It's,
yeah,
way too long.
Yeah, it kept going.
Way too long.
It kept going.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this, though. Like, my distaste for that game, that was the only one I played. I played the first episode of the first one because it was free. You know, like, I think it's always been free. And I liked it okay when I played it long, long time ago. And then it's interesting. All of the things that I disliked about True Colors are the things that people really like about it and about the series. So I just, I look at this, I'm like, not for me, thanks. You know what I mean? Like,
I do have to say, I really enjoyed the story and the kind of way you went through Life is Strange 2. This one with the two brothers.
Oh yeah. And like the Mexican border or something like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And like your brother basically, like, you don't have powers, but your brother does. And it kind of starts with this like big moment where he kind of like explodes and his power like kind of like shoots out. I forget if he kills or injures someone. And then basically you're trying to run across the border for safety.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that story was really cool, really action packed. Cause speaking of snooze fest, I think the one thing that lacks in a lot of them is like, you don't have a ton of action or adventure in them. It's like a couple of moments, a couple of just like story interactions. But in terms of like getting to these like really action-packed climactic moments, I think they kind of lack that sometimes because they're more of these like personal stories with sweet guitar music in the background. I have to say it's a little bit disappointing to see something like this up and down like that.
Especially because people were so excited because they brought back, well, people had mixed feelings, I think, about the main character. Mm. Because she, Max something, Caulfield, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Caulfield. She is a like beloved, but like apparently her story is over. It's ambiguous in the first one because of the way your choices impact the ending. And by having her come back, it kind of means that like, well, there kind of has to be a canonical ending to that, you know. And it kind of like undoes the idea of like that choice, you know, and that the fact that those choices matter. But I did see in that Janet Garcia review and the other review that I read from Noisy Pixels, or it was, I watched the video. They said like, I wasn't like stoked on the idea, but I didn't hate the idea, but they just don't do anything with her.
Yeah.
Like, so it's,
yeah,
like, why even bring her back? Like, why not just have a new character?
It is funny. Like another property that we've talked about in the past that, apparently starts off really well, but then ends really poorly. Have you heard about this adaptation of Uzumaki?
Have I heard about the adaptation of Uzumaki?
Okay, you have heard. Like, have you watched it?
Have I watched the adaptation of Uzumaki, Justin? I cannot fucking... I couldn't believe my eyes. Have you watched it?
I've watched the first episode.
I couldn't believe my eyes twice.
Yeah, right?
It's I watched the first episode, and I was blown the fuck away. I was like, holy shit, this is so good.
It is like...
It is astounding.
The animation is like just so like unsettling, creepy, and it, like, I think it extends a lot of what the panels are. Yes. Like, I was so excited for it.
And the way they change it too, where like in the book, it's just like each chapter is like each weird thing that happens. Whereas in the show, it like puts them all together. So it's like all of these like weird things are happening really at the exact cool same
story.
Time.
So the thing is that you get like all of the stories in there at once, yes, and you're so excited for where they're going to go. And then...
Did you watch episode 2?
I didn't watch. I just watched the highlights of it. And I'm like, I cannot watch this. This is going to destroy it.
You know, I never watch except for Survivor, I'm never like sitting down weekly to watch something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Weekly, I sat down for Uzumaki episode 1. I was so stoked. Watched with my friend Dave. He read the book and he was like super into it as well. And then episode 2 comes out and I like sat down Sunday morning because I wasn't going to stay up to watch it. And I was like, I couldn't believe my eyes. It's the worst thing I've ever seen.
But
it's horrifically bad.
You heard about like the story behind it, right? Obviously, the basically
yeah, go ahead.
The studio ran out of money and they just basically had two options. Do it with like the bad animations, like the placeholder animations, or just not release it at all. And they chose to release it. So I don't know. Like, what are your thoughts on that? If that is the option, do you think they should have released the first episode or just not? Like, it's tough, right?
It is tough. I mean, like, part of me says, if you did the first episode and just released that first episode, it being like 10 out of 10, incredibly good, I think, and then made an announcement like, hey, we unfortunately cannot, you know, continue with this because we lost funding or whatever, it would be one of the most tragic stories about something like this, where it's like, oh man, like what could have been, you know, is always going to be on everyone's minds. Versus what they did was like, it makes you wonder, like, did you guys even know what you had in the first place? Obviously they didn't. They just ran out of funding, yeah, as they said. Yeah. But like, that is a really tough question. I think I would have opted to just do the one and then sort of not tarnish the reputation of the studio. You know,
but yeah, I mean, I always think about the creators in it, and like, I understand, like, they're probably not proud of it necessarily in every sense, but like, it's more than just the animators that are involved in that. You know, you have your storyboard artists, you have all those other things. So like, instead of just keeping it like locked up, if it was like done ish, I guess just do it. Like, I don't, there's not a right answer for that, but like, it's just gotta be disappointing. Like any kind of project like that, when you run out of funding, you can't finish it and just have to do whatever. Like, that sucks to begin with.
Yes.
But then the promise of it and how good it started.
That's what the heartbreak
like,
is.
That is where it truly is. Speaking of disappointment.
Yeah. I rewatched parts of the first episode because I was like, was I
wrong?
Did asleep? Did I make
now,
it up?
Wouldn't that be the biggest like thing of all? Like episode 2 was like this weird janky like jittery thing, and they just did it to like fuck with your mind.
Well, I saw someone on Twitter saying like it's insane ARG that they would have the quality spiral like go down the drain.
By the end, it's just like shapes talking to each other and like shaking animated.
Dude, it looks like that. It looks like if I made it in Premiere. Where like you just have like the cutouts, yeah, and like they're just, it looks like they're just like dancing them in front of the screen. It's,
yeah.
Oh, it's bad. Oh, it's bad. Yeah, man. Fuck.
Sorry to bring that up.
and it is always going to be the thought of what could have been because that first episode was so good.
Yeah.
Oh, and then it's terrible.
One Punch Man season 3. When's that coming out? Season 3 delayed again. Ugh, when is this coming out? I want this fucking thing. I need it. Anyway.
Well, now I'm bummed, but let's talk about Call of Duty Black Ops 6. Justin, The only score for this game is on the PlayStation 5, where it scored an 83. It's unscored on the PC, Xbox Series X, PS4, and Xbox One, appearing on all those consoles, though. 83 for this game, kind of surprising, given the fact that a lot of the recent Call of Duty games, I mean, the multiplayer is usually, like, score well, review well, people like them, and then the campaigns tend to... Like, the overall score tends to be rather low, because it's like Madden, right? Where, like, every year, they kind of just release the same thing and iterate on it, like, a little bit. And sometimes there's changes people like, sometimes there's not. But the fact that, you know, multiple studios are sort of, like, trading off on Call of Duty games, it means that there's this sort of, like, cycle between how fast the lessons from the most recent game are learned. That said, this game is out now. It's on Game Pass. I subscribed to Game Pass.
Oh,
did the math.
Call it, like, they won. Activision won.
They did. I downloaded that. I downloaded Kenitsugami, Path of the Goddess. I downloaded, I'm not kidding, I did. Still Wakes the Deep, which is a horror game from the people who made Amnesia Machine for Pigs. And I downloaded Hellblade 2.
Thank you. Thank you. That was the one I was waiting for.
Yes, so I am going to do all of that and then Indiana Jones between right now and December. So I'm going to cancel it after 2 months of the service. But
I mean, Justin, to be honest, yeah, like, what a fucking good value that is.
Oh, I was looking at it and I was like, oh, this is awesome. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
And those were the things that jumped out to me immediately. And I was like, I know that there's other stuff on here that I might be interested in, but, like, let's do this to start. Justin, Call of Duty's pretty good, man. I mean, like, Call of Duty is pretty fun. It's a pretty good game right there.
Are you talking about the multiplayer or the single player?
A little bit of both. I played only a little bit of the campaign because I was sleepy. I love, you know this about me, perhaps. Actually, I say that now, I don't know. I love, like a political thriller.
Mm.
And I love the history of politics. And I especially love the history of, like, recent politics. And so the fact that this one is set, like, during the Gulf War in the 1990s, I find that to be a fascinating time period because it's a time period I actually don't know a whole lot about, because when you're in school and you're learning about history, you just skip that. You know, like, you just never get to it.
So basically there were cavemen and then World War II happened. And then, yep. Oh, look, graduation.
Yep, exactly. Like, you never, like, hear about this sort of stuff. And this is, you know, these events sort of set up a lot of the problems and world that we have today, you know, in terms of, like, America's foreign policy and stuff like that. And also what's great about it is that it's a big, dumb, Fast and Furious action game. You know what I mean? As all Call of Duty games are, where it's stupid. But it is fun. I've played the first two missions, and I have enjoyed that. And I have played, like, a fuck ton of the multiplayer this weekend. I'm level 22.
Oh, like, wow.
Yeah. I played a fuck ton of that multiplayer.
I mean, huge Call of Duty fan back in the day and everything like that. Like, such a fun multiplayer game. But I think the thing I always liked about the single player, like, the stories are always generally fun, but, like, that shooting is just some of the best.
It's so tight. It's shooting so good
out there. Like, there are few games that feel as good as that in terms of, like, a military kind of, like, realistic shooter like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's always been a strength of it. And I would assume this is too.
Oh yeah. And also I think, like, what's interesting about Call of Duty is, like, it sort of has survived in an age when first person shooters kind of died out. You know what I mean? Like, we get some first person shooters every now and then, but, like, not like they were.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but no, this game is great. It iterates on the previous games in two ways. The first is that I always really like when you are aiming your weapon over a piece of cover, you can mount it on that, like, the cover. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. So it's like a more stabilized turret or of sorts.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, so, you know, you've got your sniper, and if you're, like, next to, if you're, like, aiming out of a door or, like, behind a van or something like that, you can click the right thumbstick and you just, like, kind of, like, magnetize onto it so that your aim is much steadier. I always really like that. Because it just, I think it's an interesting mechanic, and it's not in all of the games, or at least some of them it is.
I haven't.
It's been a minute.
The last couple I haven't played, so I wouldn't know.
I think it was in Modern Warfare 3. I just played that one, but I don't know. It's not always in them, is what I'm trying to get at. And this one specifically, it has that in it, but it also has this like function where if you are just standing near cover, you peek out. Ooh. As opposed to like, you're not fully behind it in the way that you would be if you like latch onto it, but you are like just peeking out just a little bit. So you are like, are still in more cover than before. It's a small thing, but it's really cool because it just means that like, you're able to be a little bit more tactical with that sort of stuff. And you need it because of the new movement system. Have you heard about this?
Mm-mm.
So basically now, you can sprint for as long as you want.
Just like real life.
Exactly. Just like in real life. So there's two types of sprinting. There's like the all out, like hauling ass where you like click the sprint button twice and you can only do that for like, I don't know, 5 seconds. But that's probably way too long, but you like is limited, but then you can do the regular sprinting as long as you want. And you can now sprint in any direction. So you can sprint left, right, back, and forward. So it basically gives you, it means that you're able to like really, really move around and like hoof it in any direction you want. And there's a higher emphasis on sliding and diving. So like if you hold B while you're sprinting backwards, you are going to launch yourself backwards, like Max Payne, basically. In order to take people out, which you can do off a ledge if there's someone underneath, like underneath the ledge you're on and you want to get them, but they're, you can't get them from above. You can like launch yourself off backwards and sort of get them that way. It's cool. It opens things up a lot more.
How fast is it? Because I think one of the things that's kind of lost me on Call of Duty, like multiplayer in the past, is how fast it was, which is why like Warzone is a little bit more my speed because there's more time between encounters. And I feel like, in the last few Call of Duty campaigns, proppers I played, the multiplayer is a little crazy for me.
It is fast.
Yeah.
100% it's fast. But to me, kind of like riding a bike. I felt a little bit like John Wick. I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back. You know what I mean? After the first few rounds.
Wait till that zombie mode.
I got my ass kicked.
Yeah.
I got my ass handed to me. And then all of a sudden it like clicked. I'm like, oh, I got this. I will say the one thing I'm disappointed in is the operators. I think in the past Call of Duty games, the operators that you have unlocked are tied to your Warzone account.
I thought so.
And then now I do not believe it is.
Okay.
Because I cannot play as Nicki Minaj anymore. And that is
now
very upsetting to me.
Yeah, that might just be a personal choice she made.
No, it's fair. I mean, it is very graphic the way she gets blowed up.
Have you seen that show? Was it called Gamer with Gerard Butler?
No.
And he plays like a like convicts that like get controlled by humans in like a video game with like they actually can die. And like if you survive enough games, then you're free. And Gerard Butler's like close to getting, and then he basically has to like take down the system.
It's fun.
Is that the Nicki Minaj you've been playing? She's just a
prisoner.
Yeah,
but I think she died.
Constantly, yeah.
Elena was surprised at how graphic it is, because she's like, oh my gosh, like if you're like a celeb, like you're Snoop Dogg, he's in it too. Like you're just like, you are allowing them to literally blow your face off. You know what I mean? Like it is it's a graphic. Like it's not a character. It's not like you can play Homelander and Homelander dies or whatever. It's like, no, it's like Nicki Minaj, the lady is doing this, but. So far I like it. It is a wonderful game to listen to some podcasts to and just like chill. It's quite good. I'm enjoying my time with it.
We have different ideas of chill, I think.
Dude, I like
you sitting there watching Nicki Minaj blow up.
Dude, I played it until 2 a.m. on Saturday.
Damn.
I was like, I have to go to bed.
Yeah. That game is a time suck.
It is. It's very good though. Last game in the Metacritic roundup, Justin, Dragon Age, The Veilguard.
Ooh.
Scored an 80 on the PC, an 84 on the PS5, and a 93 on the Xbox Series X. Justin.
I want the Series X score for Open Critic right now,
yeah,
my
friend. I bet. You are our resident Dragon Age fan, our resident Dragon Age connoisseur. How do you feel about this?
So from what I'm hearing about it, it is everything I want in a classic BioWare game. And that has to do with character. Your characters are interesting. I think what there's 7 or 8, companion members that you have in the game. Each one of them is a interesting character to be. Their stories are interesting. The worlds are interesting. To me, that is like, I think a really like enticing thing about it, because end of the day, Baldur's Gate, the combat, I want to knock my head against a brick wall sometimes when I'm playing it, but the characters and like those interactions are like what I want from a Dragon Age game.
Yes.
I want to have that kind of stuff. And this one seems to have awesome characters. And the one thing that I don't see is it being a true sequel to Dragon Age Inquisition in anything more than just name and a couple of character references and places and stuff like that. Like it doesn't continue that story in a satisfying enough way, even though it has similar characters in it. Like obviously one of the main characters is the Solus, or the Dreadwolf character, who by now I don't think it's a spoiler or anything like that. He plays one of your close confidants in Dragon Age Inquisition, and then has this weird turning point at the end of the game where it's like at the post-credit scene, it's like, wait, is that guy bad? And then the DLC for that game said, oh yeah, he's not good. He's kind of the bad guy. He's the antagonist for it. And he's kind of like the figure that at least at the beginning you're kind of chasing after. So my assumption would be he's probably a complicated hero again.
Sure.
In it. But like, there's just something like the BioWare does story better than so many other people, or they used to do it better than other people. And to hear it's even hearkening back to those older games is really exciting for me.
Sure.
The thing that I'm not excited about is the combat style of it. And while people seem to think the combat's okay, it's not it's going back to more of the straight up action rather than any sort of tactics with it. And that worries me a little bit. For my overall enjoyment on it, specifically playing it on my platform of choice, the PlayStation Portal. But overall, still happy to hear a lot about what this game is.
Yes, it seems like people are really liking it. And it seems like exactly what you said, like from the reviews that I've seen. Dragon Age the Veilguard is a wonderful follow-up to Dragon Age Inquisition, but it feels like, where has this been this whole time? You know what I mean? That thing of like this is great. Like it's not dated, it's not old, but it's kind of like I wanted this 5 full years ago.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Maybe that would have been too soon after Inquisition. But
I don't know. I mean, and even on top of that too, like I do like what BioWare does. I think the thing that I never really got into Anthem because that was kind of a mess from the beginning.
Yeah.
But people have issues with Mass Effect Andromeda. I don't, because it is a jump dash game. You know how I feel about those. And Dragon Age Veilguard does not feel like a jump dash game, but I still like their storytelling and their general exploration, world exploration in those games. So I am kind of excited about this. So I don't know. Are you interested in this at all?
No. I mean, like, sure, I guess. I just like the one thing that is working in its favor seems to be the fact that from what I can tell, people, I think Paul Tassi said, like, I beat the game at 60 hours. It's a big game, but not big. And I was like, oh, that's actually like, that means I am much more likely to play it. However, just looking at like what I have to do for the rest of the year, I'm still doing Metaphor. I've got Call of Duty. I've got Kintsugami Path of the Goddess. I've got Hellblade. There's got to be something else here too, right? I got to finish Zelda, Silent Hill 2. Like, I have a lot of stuff to do, and I just don't know if I have the time for this. And reviews are not like... Reviews are good, don't get me wrong, but the reviews are not saying, like, if you are not a Dragon Age fan, you have to play this, you know?
Yeah.
In the way that, like, Baldur's Gate 3 was like, if this doesn't even seem like it's your shit, it is. You gotta play it, you know?
And I would say, for me, I think I said, like, earlier that if it, like, is like a Dragon Age game, but like scoring like a high 80s, I'm definitely going to play it. It's right at that level of like, there's enough flags here that I don't know if I have to play it day one when it comes out, because it comes out Halloween, right?
Yeah. Thursday.
Well, that's a mistake, but so yeah, I don't know. I'm in a little bit of a crossroads still with what I want to do with the, if I want to play this game or not, because there are so many things I want to play, and I want to make sure I beat Zelda, because I do enjoy that. I just haven't really had a. You said Call of Duty is a relaxing game, and I know Zelda is kind of supposed to be a relaxing game, but puzzle games, no matter how simplistic, straightforward, and you just summon a 4-star monster to beat all your enemies kind of thing, Zelda is. It's still a puzzle game, and sometimes it's not the most relaxing brain fart to do.
No, that, you do have to pay attention to that game, I feel.
Yeah.
I will say I listened to Nextlander talk about that game, just saying like it continues to be exactly this, and you kind of wish that it doesn't. You kind of wish that it evolves in some way, and it just never does, which is kind of a disappointment.
Yeah.
Which is how I was already sort of starting to feel after, what, like 5 hours in it. I was like, okay, is there more to this, or is it just this? And it seems like it's just this.
It's a little repetitive. Not repetitive. What's the word I'm looking for? You know how, like, Tears of the Kingdom, it's like you, like, or Breath of the Wild, it's like you have four beasts that you have to get in any order. But like, even though they're like pretty repetitive, once you get there, the journey to those places is so unique, and that's what makes the game unique. This one, the journey is like not necessarily unique between them. It's just like platforming to get to these places. And then the places are very much like find a place, fix a rift. And then
I was really hoping that the game would capture the same sort of like cleverness that I felt in Tears of the Kingdom when I solved a problem. And I was like, oh yeah, like, I did that because of the solution I came up with, whereas the solution for this is summon the strongest guy.
And it feels like a lot of the solutions are like you kind of like pushing against the geometry rather than the developers thought of it.
Yes, 100%. Or though, the developers didn't think of it, but thought that you might.
And let me tell you, though, some of the cool, like, I'm really interested and into a lot of the, like, YouTube shorts and, like, videos about people breaking the game. I think it's cool that it's allowing you to break the game, but I don't think I'm ever going to play the game like that.
Certainly not. It's the same way where, like, you watch people build, like, giant mech suits in Tears of the Kingdom, and you're like, cool.
Yeah, you can do
that. I'm not doing that, cool.
I got my unicycle. That's good. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. Dragon Age: The Veilguard. So are you thinking you might, or I know that you played some Metaphor.
I don't know.
And I'll tell you something, Justin. Before we started recording, you had a little bit of a long face. You said, ask me about it when we start talking about Metaphor.
I don't know what I'm going to do.
Okay.
So I have not bought Metaphor yet, but I played the demo.
Easy enough.
The demo basically goes to the catacombs, like the first dungeon, I guess. Is that the first dungeon? It's like spoilers. It's right after the reveal of the moon.
So it gets even past. Okay, yes.
So it's like right after that.
Okay, gotcha. What's the name of the guy with the beard and the kid?
Yeah, gone.
Yeah, okay, after all that, great.
Yeah. Glad I...
It's the first, like, 2 hours of the game, guys. Come on. Yeah,
glad I spent upgrade points on fucking him.
You get your stuff back eventually.
Oh, do you? Oh.
They did the same thing in Persona 3, where something happens to someone, and then they go, like, yeah, all this stuff's right here.
Oh.
Left all this stuff right here. And you
okay. I was a little frustrated, because I know there are... Are not necessarily finite resources, but there are resources that are limited at the beginning.
Especially in the early hours. Yeah.
Yeah. So I started playing it, and I texted you as I was doing it. In the first, I'm going to be honest, the first hour is bad.
Can you remind me what happens in the first hour? You're on you're going to the capital city. You get kicked out the wagon, and then you run there.
So I mean, it's not the gameplay that bothers me at the beginning, because I understand, like, in an RPG at the beginning, it's just like run away from shit and like do whatever.
Yeah,
it's the storytelling of it, and what they do with this story, it's one of those, they kind of jump you into like the they jump you after the exposition. You're the main character with your little fairy character. You don't really know what their relationship is. You know they have like a plan that they are going after. And then their caravan gets attacked by bandits. And then it leads to one thing to another. You end up going to like a castle and you find your first human or whatever. And then they start to like go back and kind of establish who your character is, mm-hmm. what the world is like. But like, they did such, and I still think they have done at this point, like through the demo, a bad job of establishing the world and the races and the different people in it and all of that kind of stuff, to a point where I think it's a missed opportunity, because that's the shit I love in fantasy. I love the world building of it. And I like, maybe you have more perspective on this, but as they're starting that, like, I'm finally starting to like and understand the characters and the relationships, but I still don't like it, and I'm not interested in the world enough for me to be like, this is really cool. Take it back to what's that fucking game I love so much that I can't remember right now.
Fire Emblem Three Houses?
That's a banger. No, the Nintendo one, Xenoblade Chronicles, right?
Yes.
The beginning of that game, like, it can be slow as you get your progressions, but how they start off these two warring factions that basically like meet each other and like you are kind of get interspersed with this other warring race of people, how they set that world up is just done in a way that is so easy to understand for how complex it is. And it's so cool and interesting. This one, they do not get you in the world right away. But the story does start to grab you once you've just accepted that the pretext of it is kind of ugh.
Yeah, because it is an interesting story, but you are so right where it's like it does take a second to get there, and it's not interested in catching you up. You have to do like additional reading.
Yeah.
Which like I can understand why you might not want to do this if you just want to like tell your story and whatever and like just say like, well, if you want to know all of it, you got to read. But I think it would be, this is the sort of game that would probably benefit from like a fish out of water.
Yeah.
Where like maybe you are, because you're an Elda and you're kind of an outsider, you don't know the intricacies of all of the different like races and like the power struggle and whatever with like the religions and stuff like that. And so like if you could just be like, what is going on here? And then Galica, the fairy, could be like, hey, you know, he's a I'm forgetting what the different races are called, but he's a dog man. Like the dog men are slaves, and like no one wants these guys.
But that is like the important thing that like, I think would help to establish this stuff, like from the beginning. And as we meet these different races, it's like, oh, we got a horned person, we got a this person, but it doesn't like create these interesting contexts of the world. And I think for whatever your thoughts were on Final Fantasy 16, I think what they nailed in that story is setting up how interesting these warring factions were. And they did a thing at certain times where you kind of get the end of a character, but they've already established the baseline for what this world is. And these like nuclear bombs that people are controlling with their, icons that they have, that like, it's kind of interesting that as you're getting parts of these stories and seeing how they come together. This one, you were missing that beginning part. You don't have to answer, because I would assume this is spoilers. If you started the story as a young protagonist, as the young character, I named mine Will or whatever, because I thought that was the canon name for it. If you start that relationship with the prince, that's how you start things off. You get to know a little bit about the world. You have this Eldian who's learning about the prince and all this stuff. And then they do a time skip or something like that.
I also think there is a fair amount of like flashback stuff that happens that does fill that stuff out a little bit.
Which I'm sure it does. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that even like now, I don't think your character needs an excuse to not sort of like buy into the bullshit of like, well, the different races are too different to be able to work together and whatever. Like, I think it's fine. Like the explanation is he just doesn't feel that way.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right.
But like, it is odd. Like a lot of people comment on the fact as you get further, like, oh, you have sort of this group of like people of all different races. Like that's kind of odd. You know what I mean? And I think having him be a fish out of water, if he wasn't like from the society, which he's not, but like if the explanation was like, oh, like I just didn't even think about it.
Right.
Because where I'm from, it doesn't matter.
Right.
You know?
Or you establish it, and again, I hate to like story explain or mansplain what the story have been instead of what it is. You could have that fish out of water story where it wasn't revealed that you were an Eldian until later on. And that kind of explains some of like your hiding of things and like why you're like unaware of some of the stuff. And it's like, well, how do you not know this? You've lived here. But then it turns out you're something else, that you were trying to hide who you were for whatever reason it is or something like that. Instead of it just like jumping you in, and it's just like, okay, you keep saying this thing Eldian, but I don't know why that should matter. And whenever there's like a prompt in like dialogue or something like that, I always choose the I'm a stupid one, because they give you more context of the story than when you ask that kind of stuff, which is fine. But like, it takes you away from this protagonist that is a voice protagonist, which is a big deal.
That's the thing too, right? Like, a lot of people love to say like, oh, like Joker from Persona 5, his name's like, his canon name is like Ren. A lot of people are like, oh, Joker, Ren is such a good character. He's not, he's a blank slate.
Right.
This guy is not a blank slate. He is a character.
Right.
Because he's voiced and like has a lot more voice lines and a lot more like dialogue and stuff like that, as opposed to just the guy going, show me your true form as Joker. You know what I mean? Like, that's nothing. So I do agree with you, and I do understand. And I think like when I played this for the first time, I was like, it takes a second, which is like, you know, Persona is the same way, but like, with Persona at the very least, I think it's easy to understand. Like, okay, you're a kid, you're going to school, easy. Whereas this, it's like, what do you think about the separation of church and state? And it's like, all right, okay.
Now, here's the thing, though. I love the way the story is being told so much better than Persona.
Interesting.
And I think that has to do with a couple things. I think I'm more interested in fantasy than modern day Japan.
Sure.
As a setting. I think it's more interesting to me. But I also think like the stakes are much more apparent, at least in the beginning parts of Metaphor.
It's clear what the goal is.
Right, right.
The whole time. Whereas in Persona, like Persona 5, it's like, I guess we're going to change the school. And then it's like, I guess we're just going to change like the heart of this artist. Like, you don't know like what the overarching goal is. Where and like Persona 3, it's just explore Tartarus. I don't know, you know. Whereas is exactly what you're saying. In Metaphor, it starts out like, there is going to be a new king. Who is it going to be?
Yeah.
Go.
You and know, that's a good premise. On top of all that, it's like the premise of what you're doing at the very beginning and what your goal is at the very beginning. That stuff is interesting enough and done with enough that I want to kind of find out how the story is. And I get Persona 4 is essentially a like murder mystery story, correct?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Like, I think that story is a little bit more clear, but I think the speed of that story bothers me. Because it's not like a year from now. It's like someone is murdering people now, and you have a bunch of these teenagers like sipping like boba in like the shop and stuff. And it's like, come on, guys. Like I feel like there's more stakes that we need to like get things moving quicker here rather than it just being kind of a chill game.
In my opinion, what I really like about this game, Metaphor, is that like the story beats are really significant and change things about what's going on in the world. And I think it also helps that you go different places.
Yes.
Whereas in Persona 4, like you're in the same place for the whole game.
Yep.
Same Persona 5, Persona 3, like you were just in the one place, and it opens up a little bit more as time goes on. But like, you know, it's the same thing.
Yep.
And this is smaller areas, but there's at least the variety, and each of the place feel different places feel different. And like, because you know, they are so heavily segregated by like the race, like when you are in, you know, this place, there's more people of this kind. Whereas, and like they have a whole different like vibe to like what they talk about and like how they feel and the types of quests they have versus, you know, in the main capital and stuff like that.
The also thing too, like, I think one of the biggest, like, issues with me in like Persona 5 too, again, using that as the more direct comparison here, it's I the modern stuff just feels icky when you're dealing with like teachers like and students together, and then later after you vilified the coach at the beginning,
oh 100%
you have a relationship with the teacher who gives you massages and stuff, like it's just like, it's just weird. And I think that's more of a cultural thing than anything that is kind of bothering me, but it just takes me out of it to a place where I'm saying these questions, whereas in a fantasy I can just be like, it's just a metaphor, you know what I mean?
100%. And I think this game avoids that just because like first of all, you're an adult in the game as opposed to being a teenager. And also you can't have like, there's no relationships or anything like that.
Well, you and your sword that you skate
on. Which is a shame, because if it were up to me, who's the shopkeeper? What's her name? lady with the white hair and the dog. And she's cool.
Okay.
She's very good.
Yeah.
She's
one to say a good girl.
I'm probably going to delete that part.
or at least beep it out. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. And they're like something that Elaine and I had talked about when she wanted to like Persona so bad. We tried to play it together and like, she did not fuck with it, but couldn't admit it. You know what I mean? She was like, no, I like it. I was like, you don't have to. But there are like kind of uncomfortable moments that happen sort of throughout the Persona series with stuff like that. Like what you're saying about like, you know, you spend all this time, like this teacher is so terrible, but then when it's the lady teacher, it's fine.
Yep.
'Cause she wears a maid outfit, I guess. There's like in every single Persona game for no reason at all. They're like, what if we did a scene that's the most homophobic thing you've ever seen? You know? And like Elaine and I talked a lot about like, how do you love something that is flawed?
Yeah.
And that does have like, you know, mean spirited moments to it and problems to it. Whereas this game, I think largely avoids all of that because it's all about like bringing people together and hope. And there's just like that fan service-y aspect of it doesn't exist at all.
And
you know?
Maybe this is coming at election time, but like the politics of it all is quite interesting. Like why would people follow Luis, right? That's the like why, like that in and of itself is interesting. And even though like literally fucking first 10 minutes, guys, not even, this is like the opening cutscene, even though he fucking stabs the king.
and everyone knows
like people are still like following him, but like the setup for that is so interesting and so cool. Yeah. And I really like think that's so, so neat. So I really am enjoying the story of it. And I think regardless of anything else I say, that is still something that is going to keep me going through, because while Persona, I snooze as they're sitting around talking about what they're going to do next as these like deviant children. This one, I do not get that. I'm legitimately interested about what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the whole like bond system makes sense considering what the end game is of your
of getting popular and meeting people and connecting with like individuals.
100%. Right. Yeah. And I also think what's the name of the powers that you get? The archetype system is also something that is a little bit more intentional sometimes than the personas that you have to like capture and stuff like that. It just feels like it all like connects in a way that makes more sense to me, in a way that I like. All that being said, I've always loved the stressful combat situation with it, about like, am I preserving my MP here? Am I preserving my health here? What is the best combo of things? Like, I like that aspect of Persona, and I love it in Metaphor. And I really think that the movement of this game, like as you're going through a dungeon, is really interesting and fun as you're kind of going around and like juggling about like, am I gonna like try to like sneak up on this thing? How am I gonna get through this to the next objective? What enemies am I gonna attack first? How am I gonna like choose when I rest to like, you know, get myself back and stuff like that? That's always fun to me. The one thing I do not like about Persona though is the stress of fucking up social links, which this game doesn't
seem... They totally got rid of it.
Right.
They got rid of it, where every single time you hang out with someone, you upgrade, yeah.
And that makes it not like, am I messing up or I have to get do the right path? You get to choose your time without feeling like you're necessarily hurting other things like I do in Persona. Like, I feel like in Persona, if I don't follow a guide or at least have some ideas about how to optimize it, I'm going to have to like restart the game halfway through because I fucked up, and I don't want to do that.
I know what you mean. And I think that's something about this game that is really good, is like, it also just reduces the amount of options you have, which on one hand can feel like, well, what the fuck am I supposed to be doing today? You know? Right. But on the other hand, it just means that like one of these three things, as opposed to one of these 9 million things. And,
right.
And it's hard to know, like there are some things in Persona that I just wouldn't recommend you do because I think there's better uses of your time. You know what I'm saying? Or if I'm like, or there's like conditions to it. I'm like, well, studying is a good idea, but you really only want to study when it's raining
on
out.
This day, or like, yes, or like whatever and stuff like that. And make sure on Tuesdays you go here. Otherwise, yes, you missed out a good opportunity, and that just adds the stress to it.
Which, by the way, in metaphor, once you finally get the gauntlet runner, the big ship. Like ship thing, if you use the bathroom in there on days that end that are divisible by five, you will get a luck boost every single time. So just do that.
Does it count for time?
Nope.
Who tells you that?
Nope.
No one?
Nope. I read it on Twitter and I was like, huh.
Yeah, I'm going to take a shit every day that ends at a five, I guess.
I do that.
Every day that ends with Y, you know what I mean?
Hey, nice. So it sounds like you're more into it than when you texted me. Because when you texted me, you were like, it's bad.
Which
it's tough at the start. It is.
Again, the story is bad at the start because I don't feel connected to the characters or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But as it ramps up, at one moment I was like listening to like there was a scene that was happening with like some epic reveals or something like that. And Claire commented being like, oh, I feel like some epic stuff going on in there. Like she just like felt like the vibe of it because it is that like anime like hype stuff. And I feel like it just plays better in this fantasy setting than Persona for me. And I really like that. And while I still don't really care about many of my characters I've met yet, I care about where the story is going enough that I'm sure along the way it's a Persona game, you're gonna like these characters. So I think that will come eventually, but I just want to know more about it. I don't want to be on the outside of this awkward relationship with this fairy that's hanging around me. I want to know what the fuck their deal is.
Yes, 100%. 100%. So are you going to buy Metaphor, you think?
Well, that's my dilemma. That's why I'm upset because...
I see. Too many good things.
One of the things I did as I was eating dinner today before we recorded was I was reading and watching video reviews on Dragon Age. And they were speaking my language. And it seems like a lot of what I like about... Well, no, not necessarily. I think it's more characters than the story. Dragon Age seems to be about more of the characters. The story itself is not great. But I prefer the combat for Dragon Age, the action-y combat versus the strategy stuff of Metaphor. But I think it's a victory that I'm even having this discussion. And I honestly think that as of now, I'm probably leaning towards just sticking with Metaphor because I've already put 5 hours into it.
It's fair.
They're both going to be a $70, 100-hour experience for me because, you know, I'm going to fucking platinum Dragon Age.
Yes.
Because I'm broken.
Yeah, and if you wanted to, you could platinum Metaphor. You just have to play it twice.
Only twice?
Mm-hmm, I think. Well, as long as you make sure that you do all the things.
What does that entail to play it twice?
About 180 hours.
I do have to say, I do not think this would be a game I'd want to play twice.
No. Well, or like if you are doing that, like just skip.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Even on top of that, what I've done so far, the thought of skipping the cutscenes, it'd be quicker, but like the moment to moment, I do not know if specifically once I'm at the end game, the first part of it is going to be something that would be compelling and not just a chore that takes time. Whereas I could see theoretically why playing Persona again might be fun. Because you can do what you haven't accomplished in a certain way or focus in a different way or play again with the knowledge. I'm sure that was the same in Metaphor, but I do not feel like this game feels a little more, it's not though, but linear, if that makes sense.
It is harder to miss a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
As opposed to Persona where, like you were saying, that game has a hard time telling you like what is worth it and what isn't.
Yeah.
It just sort of leaves it up to you to figure that out, which on one hand I do like, cause I do appreciate sort of it just saying like, go ahead, you know? But it is difficult when trying to figure out like if you are doing the right thing. And also like, if you're not someone like me, if you're the type of person who's going to play it once, how do you know? Like, how do you know until
can,
it's maybe too
can
late?
Can you platinum on one run through, or do you have to do it twice?
Metaphor? You have to do it twice. I know.
Even if it's optimized, like, up to Wazoo?
Yeah. Because it's like there's a like a secret boss in New Game Plus or something like that.
Ah, fuck that.
Yeah, I know.
The dragon? Can you fight that dragon you creep around at the beginning?
Oh, did you not?
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you beat it?
Yeah.
Is it hard?
First try. I mean, it's a challenging fight, but like you just gotta keep everyone healthy and block when it's charging up.
Should I go back and do it again and replay hours? Okay.
No, because like eventually you're gonna find gear that's better than the gear that they had. Okay. You know what I mean? It's just like good early game gear, but like when you start exploring catacombs, you're gonna find better stuff.
Did they do that thing where in Persona where they tell you what other people were like when they're in the dungeon?
Yep.
I do like that a lot.
It's great.
Like, I think that just helps you kind of like see the variety of like play styles in terms of the archetypes, but also like, am I okay? can I do this?
Exactly to what we were saying before too, is it's like when you hit that, it doesn't almost crash your PS5 when it tells you the 800 different things that you could do today.
Yeah.
Instead, it just says, you know, you went to the dungeon, you talked to this person, did this activity, the end.
Wait, are we talking about the same thing?
Are you talking about where if you hit the touchpad, it like pulls up like what other people did?
Yeah. It also says that. Oh, okay. Because I just the time I did it was at that first like the mine part, and it was just basically like what their levels were. It wasn't as okay.
You can see what level people are and sort of what archetypes they're using, and then you can also, if you're like, as soon as it kicks you out and it's like, okay, we've got 15 days to do this, you can do that. And the same thing as happens in Persona, okay, where it pulls up like,
that's kind of cool,
the activities people did as well. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of cool.
I agree. Well, I'll be interested to hear if you play more of that. I played only a little bit just because I was doing Call of Duty. I played more Silent Hill 2, which I'm liking actually quite a bit. And I finished Faith, the Unholy Trinity, Justin. That was that, Switch game. It's on PC. It's all over the place, where it looks like an Atari 2600 game about like exorcisms and demons and stuff.
Are you happy you did?
No. Holy shit. No. First time maybe ever that I've put a game down for a day because I got too freaked out.
Oh,
where I was like, no, thanks.
Do you mind sharing with like what was so freaky about it?
Yeah, my legs just got goosebumps thinking about it. So I talked about this a few weeks ago, where basically it looks like an Atari 2600 game, but sometimes you get cutscenes that are like rotoscoped and very sort of upsetting to watch. And so there's a section in the third chapter where you go to an apartment building, and it is fucking dreadful. It is horrible because of how tense and frightening it is. And eventually you get this optional objective where there's an elevator, and if you punch in the right numbers on the elevator, it's like an 8-digit combo, you go to the 7th floor where you normally cannot reach. And goosebumps.
I'm
all
sorry
over.
You don't have to. I can play it if you want.
So when you are typing in the numbers, before you get to this, what I like about horror games is I try and think about what I would do to scare myself. Do you know what I mean? That's kind of like a line of defense where I'm like, okay, if I were making the game, I would, like, as soon as you look into the thing, I would wait 2 seconds before the guy runs past. You know what I mean? Or like, okay, we finally got to the safe house, something's about to happen. Because I think about like, well, what would be scary is if this thing happened, you know? And so I'm subconsciously doing that anytime I play a game like this. And anytime a game sort of subverts that expectation is when it gets me really fucking good, because I'm really not expecting it. So I was expecting that when you hit the last number, so basically the elevator like rides all the way up to whatever floor you hit, and then you go all the way down, then you go all the way up, then down, whatever. I was expecting on the last number for something scary to happen. It was on the second to last number that the doors open and an old woman walks in. And she walks in and you get the rotoscope thing of her walking in. And if you look at her at all, you get another cutscene of her like becoming a horrific demon very fast. And then she rushes you and kills you.
Mm.
And it there's this like really loud shrieking noise. It's very upsetting. So I looked up a guide. I'm like, what the fuck was I supposed to do there? And you cannot look at her at all. And if you do, she kills you. And so you have to ride the elevator.
When the elevator opens, you have to look down before she like comes in, or
you just can't face her, because it's not like looking. It's not like a first person game. It's like very basic. You just cannot face looking at her at all. So she comes in, and then I was expecting her to just walk in and walk out. She's in the elevator with you. So you just have to sit there and you hit the next number. And then as soon as you sort of get to the other world in like the 7th floor, she calls out to you. And she asks in like the old Atari 2600 like voice sound. She's like, where are you going? prompting you to look at her so she fucking kills you. Do you know what I mean?
That's creepy.
Very, very scary. But the first time it happened, I was like, fuck this. I'm out. And Elena asked me, she was like, why are you doing this? And I was like, because I have to know. And I also was like, I can't let this beat me because if I let this beat me, then it'll be scary forever.
Yeah.
You know, and I have to overcome this for myself.
What would you give the game? Ranking, review, recommend?
Really tough question. Would I recommend this game to anyone? Probably not. Unless you're in the mood for something really fucked up and like dark. You know what I mean? Like Elena even asked, she said something along the lines of like, why would someone make this? And I was like, dude, I don't know why someone
buy it? You know,
she told me, she's like, cause I've been playing a lot of horror games and like, you know, we talked about like clickholding and stuff like that. And I was like, she goes, I think you're in your darkness era. And I was like, what? So I guess I'm in my darkness era today. Now,
darkness.
Faith the Unholy Trinity. I uninstalled it as soon as I was done with it. I would recommend it to anyone looking for something really fucked up.
Okay. Wow. Mm. I would say just wait for next Tuesday.
Yeah. Oh gosh. I'm ready. I'm so ready. I think there's been like this like overarching like anxiety of all of that everyone's been feeling, right? Like I'm ready for it to be over. So we just know. We're just ready to know. And I think it's going to be okay. I have to have hope that it's going to be okay.
Well, so here's the thing. If the bear story I told you means anything about me as a person, I'm happy we have off Election Day, but the day I really want to have off is the day after Election Day.
Yes. 100%. I got to figure out if I'm registered to vote. I am registered to vote, but I have to figure out
where
my polling place is.
Oh.
Because I might accidentally still be registered in the place I lived before, but
all right. Wait, I don't want to dox myself here. See what this is? I'm turning it in tomorrow.
Oh, is it your early vote?
Early ballot comes in the mail. You never fucking have to think about it.
It's good. I wish I was smart. About it.
No, you're not. You're beautiful. You're smart.
Oh,
you're perfect.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. Let's talk about the news. I know we're coming in kind of late to the news, but there honestly wasn't that much that happened this week. The first thing, and both of these first two things are like kind of bummers. The first thing is that Netflix has closed its first AAA game studio. I believe it was just titled, the studio was just called Blue. apparently, according to this headline from The Verge by Ash Parrish, the studio known as Blue was developing a multi-platform AAA game for an original IP when Netflix shut it down. The studio is being led by, who was this? Chako Sani. He was, I think, one of like the lead designers for like Halo for a long time. Oh, and God of War. Executive producer for Overwatch.
Executive producer do
for Overwatch? Nothing.
Nothing. Like, what,
for
like,
Overwatch specifically, nothing. This thing shut down 2 years. They gave it, which is frustrating because it's like, well, with AAA studios, like 2 years is nothing. Like it's really nothing unless you're, you know, the studio behind Yakuza. But just kind of a bummer because Netflix right now has just been buying studios and it has been like buying studios that have made games. You know what I mean? Forgetting the name of the studio that made like Oxenfree, but they picked them up and a handful of other studios that already have games. And then now they're like, okay, we're going to make our own game, but they can't even do that. Like they just shut it down before it could even get its feet off the ground. What do you think?
I mean, I think it just goes with the trend about like, there's this like weird initiative by a lot of companies to make money, but also like try to get new games. So they put money into these new companies and they don't give them enough time for them to finish games. And I think it's a little upsetting that there are so many people are starting these companies without actually seeing any games kind of come to light with them. I do think, I mean, I said this for a while, and again, we're in another surprisingly beautiful year of video games, how I don't know how sustainable this industry is going to be because the games are more and more expensive to make, and they take more and more time to make. I mean, more expensive than movies in a lot of places, more expensive than more expensive and time consuming than movies for sure. And they don't make as much money as movies. So yeah. Like, why are, and not to necessarily defend like companies for doing this kind of stuff, but at a certain point, like, when are they going to stop trying to make these companies to get the next Fortnite?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone wants a Fortnite, but that's not the reality of like what this industry is. There can only be so many of those. It's not like a TV series or a movie. It's like something that is, there's a finite amount of time that we have.
Which I'll say I can appreciate when a studio understands that. So, for example, that new game, FBC Firebreak, the multiplayer game in Control, someone asked Remedy, like, is this a live service game? And they were like, kind of. Is it a live service game in the sense of that you need to log in every single day and do your dailies and get the battle pass and do all this stuff? No. No, there's going to be updated content for this, and it's going to be a multiplayer game. But like, it is not demanding your attention in the same way that something like Fortnite or Warzone or Apex is, which I can appreciate because like, so many studios are trying to, you know, take your attention away from those games. So no, play my game, play Concord every single day. When it's like, no one's going to do that. You have to figure out how your game is going to fit into this marketplace, not how your game is going to fit into like, not how you can fit your game into my life or. Do you understand what I'm getting at?
Yes. Yes, I do.
It's messy, but yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I think this is just like one of those all too unfortunate stories right now that's happening. But it also just seems like a bunch of these big executives started a company, got paid for a little bit, and are looking for the next thing to do. Be damned, all the people working under them.
Yes, it's unfortunate. Speaking of, next thing is, here's a headline from Engadget, by Lawrence Bonk. Ubisoft has disbanded the team behind Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown. Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown was a, pretty big hit earlier in this year. One of the best reviewed games of the first, like, 6 months of 2024. It's Metroidvania. I think we haven't gotten a Prince of Persia game in a while either. So it's sort of a return to form for Ubisoft. Scored really well, performed really well, or at least seemed to perform really well, but it seems like it has been disbanded. This is a statement that the senior producer from the game said to Eurogamer. Most of the team members who worked on Prince of Persia: The Last Crown have shifted to other projects that will benefit from their expertise. Basically saying, you know, no one's been laid off, at least from what it seems like. However, there is not a Prince of Persia The Lost Crown 2 in the works. So that's unfortunate because it seemed like that game was pretty special. You picked this up, didn't you? You bought it?
Yeah, it just came. It was $21 on Amazon, like not a bad sale that I did. So I'm like, hey, this is the game I was looking forward to. Might as well just pick up a copy of it. And like, as you said, this scored an 88 on Switch, 85 on PC, 86 on PS5, and an 87 on Xbox. So like, this is for all intents and purposes a good game. Not just a good game, near a great game. And it just kind of stinks when you hear, oh my God, you can buy it for $24.99 at GameStop right now. Did I really get a good deal? It's only $3 different. Yeah. Huh. Speaking of like money and what you should do with your money. It's $40 originally. It's on sale right now at GameStop. Speaking about that, and this is probably a problem that I'm talking about this instead of like the video game. I really have wanted to get the chicken Big Mac at McDonald's.
I've heard about the chicken Big Mac,
but I'm afraid to go to McDonald's because of E. coli.
Oh, yeah. I did see this.
So they're like, it's only the quarter pounder onions. And that makes me think of two things. Are the quarter pounders pre-onioned or?
Yeah, it's a weird thing to say, isn't it?
Yeah, like.
Separate onions?
I don't trust it then. And if I'm going to get a Big Mac and I don't get onions on my Big Mac, am I really getting a Big Mac? Even if it's not a Big Mac, it's a chicken Mac.
Yeah.
I'm not eating twice.
Yeah.
But regardless, I think this is a sad thing. And I really just hate when a game that does well, even though they're not like fired, they're just like not focusing on this anymore. Because most of the time you have a game like this that does well, the studio has learned something about making games. They've learned something about their game and their design, and the next one that they were going to make would be better. So unless they're making a Prince of Persia like game for Assassin's Creed, which they could, I don't know. I'm a little saddened to hear something like this.
And it's exactly what you're saying about, like, it's just such a bummer because how do you make a great series? You have to grow it. Sometimes you get a smash hit, right? Sometimes you get a smash hit in one. Like, that's true. But, like, in order to build something up and have something be as successful as you want it to be, you have to have a game that's good. You know, sort of off the bat has some spark there for people to get invested in and interested in. And then you have to keep at it, you know, and you're not going to have these people learn anything from making this game to make an even better game that maybe sells even better and coast off the traction of, like, oh man, Lost Crown, like, I didn't play it because it just wasn't on my radar at the time, but it's certainly on my radar now,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And then, so I'm going to pick up the sequel, you know, and then who knows, maybe I might even buy the first game before the sequel comes out, you know, in anticipation of that. So it's just a bummer. I wish that executives understood how this sort of thing works, because it's not even just in games, right? I mean, like, I have to imagine that you've had experiences with people above you who don't understand the job that you have and don't understand how to make it work. Right?
And most of the people who don't understand the job I have at one point were in the job that I had. You know what I mean?
Which is the most astounding thing, right? Yeah. Where it's like, how do you not know this?
The joke is that, like, one of the classes in administration school must be to, like, deprogram them to forget everything that they did as teachers somewhere along the lines. Like, something's got to happen. But, yeah, it's just sad and frustrating.
Yeah. So I'm happy to hear that no one lost their jobs. At least that's what the story is, because that would be the biggest bummer of all. But, you know, it is upsetting to hear, like, well, they're not making
even if you
don't
lose your job. If you've been working on something and you're proud of something, have you ever been on a project that you've been taken off of that project, or just, like, stop that project?
What?
And that's like, I put all that time into this, even if it's something like little or silly or something like that. Like, it can be hard to have to, like, put that aside. Yeah, again, still have your job. That's a positive thing. But, like, I do things that I'm passionate about.
You know, I'm so thankful to have the job that I have right now, 100%. You know, at The Gamer, I'm happy to be there, happy to do the work that I'm doing. But exactly what you're saying, like, I was doing something at DualShockers for 6 months or 9 months almost, and now I'm not doing that anymore, not because of my choice, you know. But,
and on top of that too, like, the content that you've made, like, while technically it's still there, like,
it like, I'm trying not to look at it this way, because then I start to feel defeated. But this idea of, like, so that was for nothing.
Yeah.
So it goes.
So it goes.
'Tis the life of working for a company. I'll say this, though. Nintendo. Today. This was this morning. Animal Crossing Pocket Camp. Complete is a new version of Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, which shut down. It is yet to shut down. It's shutting down November 29th. So you've still got a little while until it shuts down.
From right now, I don't even think you can buy it, because when I go to purchase it.
You're talking about the free version?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's shutting down November 29th. But Pocket Camp Complete is launching on December 3rd, and it is a $10. It's going to eventually be $20, but for starters, it is going to be a $10 version of the game that has just all of the content in it without having to do any of the, like, it's not a gotcha game, but it's like a
purchase,
kind of like a Pikmin. Yeah. Like, there's, like, content stuff that you can, buy in there, but if you just do the Animal Crossing Complete, you just get all of that. $10 until January 31st, and then it's $20. But I think this is a great way to conserve this game. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a cool thing. Like, I mean, a daily thing like this that has had so much content in it, the fact that over these years people have played it, at the very least, you are going to get people who are fans of it wanting to play it again, maybe who, like, fell off at one point to it. But at the very most, if this is on the web store for what, it's going to be 20, you said? After
10 to start 20 in
right
February.
So, like, later down the road, people who see this, an Animal Crossing game, a game that is, like, a little bit of, like, just kind of like a time waster for the most part, it's a nice thing to have, and to have it fully complete with all the content, I think that's an awesome way to kind of preserve these free-to-play games. You get some more money free to play, free to play, but you get to get some more money on it while still keeping these games alive, even if you're not supporting it anymore. I don't think there's anything positive about this. I mean, what a smart way to support a thing you're no longer supporting anymore.
Yeah, 100%. I wish more games would do this. And I understand that, like, it is not possible for a lot of games just based on, like, what their structure is. You know what I mean? Like, could you do this with Nier Reincarnation?
Probably.
It's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that was just like these like levels with these like daily things that you do. You could still do that. Part of the problem is like no one wants to play that much of that game like that because it is something that they.
I was talking to someone about this recently where like there when that game shut down, like, I don't know, a year ago or 6 months ago, there were like articles like stop asking for Nier 3. It's already out and it's called Nier Reincarnation. And like. No, it's not. I'm not saying no because I didn't, that I'm not interested in playing mobile games and that, you know what I mean? Like I tried it. No, unfortunately not.
Yeah, that was not a game. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it like wasn't a game that was what I would consider good.
The level of quality between a title like that and a title like Nier Automata or Replicant.
Replicant version 1.011, whatever. Blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah. Yeah. Yeah, that is, in my opinion, not. You can't say that's Nier 3, guys. Come on now.
Nier 3.12. Blah, 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 blah.
No, so there's perhaps there you go. Anyway, Justin, I think that's gonna do it for us here today. Thank you so much for listening and hanging out with us. We love talking about games, and I think like. Were we talking about this when we were recording about the idea of like something that I try and remind myself when we do this is like, you know, as much as like this is like kind of work, you know, editing a podcast, sitting down, scheduling the time to do this. It is something that I do really enjoy doing. And Justin, I'm going to be entirely honest with you. Wouldn't want to fucking do this with anyone else.
I'm glad I can do it with you.
And I do mean that, you know what I mean? Like my goodness, if I had to talk to anyone else about games every single week, I might go crazy, but, So
all those woke gamers out there,
dude, so we'll catch you next week. If you want, you can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Knoll, GKS, and Josh Durham. I forgot what we're talking about in the deluxe episode, or maybe we don't know, so maybe we're gonna figure that out as soon as we're done here. Who's to say? I think that the panicked look and the shrug that you gave me is indication enough. But yeah, you can find us there. You can also like us on follow us on Twitter at HitboxPod or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, am I forgetting anything?
No, you're just forgetting how awesome it is to do a podcast with you every week.
No, I'm thinking about it right now.
No, actually, you're not forgetting about it because I think you just clearly said that, actually.
I did explicitly lay that out. All right, we'll catch you next week. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye.
I'll stop recording.